Well, Sean, I wanted to start with the Kings and Kraken because I think they just scored another goal, but we got to go with the news here. And right before we set up our microphones to record this podcast, the news came down from the Pittsburgh Penguins that defenseman Chris Letang has had a stroke, had it on Monday. It's his second time this has happened in his career. He's out indefinitely. But I think one of the more interesting and best things about the press release that the Penguins sent out, Sean, is they said it's not career threatening, which is also means it's not life threatening.
That comes first. His health comes first. He's a father. He's a son. He's a lot of things other than a hockey player. And I remember when it happened in 2014, you know, it was such a shocking development, and it's, you know, they were able to deal with it. You think about last year, how good he was last year, right? As a 33-year-old, he had 73 points. He's such an important part of their team. And you know, to have this come out of the blue, they reported that he was sick on Monday. He was out with an illness. And then today, right before we started recording, you know, they said that he had a small stroke and that he would be out indefinitely. So, you know, obviously our thoughts first go to Chris and his family, and that everything will be okay and that he'll be back soon. And he came back last time and he was fantastic. So, you know, you hope that history repeats itself, but just sobering news for sure.
Yeah, you think about, you hear that word, stroke, and you immediately think, oh my goodness, life-threatening, right? Immediately. Well, in 2014, as you mentioned, when he had this issue, and Ron Hextall, their GM, came out today, we're recording this Wednesday, and said this isn't as severe as it was in 2014. He missed over 2 months in 2014. He came back. He's played 543 regular season games and 69 playoff games since he had a stroke. That's Chris Letang. And we, look, we talk about toughness in players all the time. We talk about stuff that they play through. I don't know that this is toughness that Chris Letang has shown us or what the right word is, but it's certainly an ability to respond, an ability to rebound, an ability to understand his body, as he mentioned in the press release too, know what he can do, know when something might be wrong, just this awareness of who he is as a person, forget athlete, but as a person, and then the ability to come back and do what he's done as an athlete. I fully expect, since he's done it once before, I fully expect him to come back and do it again, because this is what he has shown us the ability to do. But the fact is that he has played 543 games since he had this incident in 2014. And this one, according to Ron Hextall, is not as severe as that. Still terrifying, but because you hear the word stroke. But apparently Chris Letang has already said, when can I skate?
Yeah, I think the word you're looking for may be perseverance.
There it is.
Right? Like,
it's a good thing you're my podcast co-host.
Yeah, no, but I think that's the word, right? Like, I would curl up and go away, like, okay, where's the egg carting that I can wrap myself in? And I want to be as safe as possible. Like, I just think athletes are wired in a different way. And let's not forget, he's surrounded by world-class health professionals that are going to make sure he's safe. He's going to get the best treatments possible. There's going to be the best possible understanding of where he is medically and where he can go. So he does have some advantages when it comes to this, obviously, but I think the word is perseverance and, you know, just an ability to, and a love of the game that you want to continue to play in the face of some very adverse news and conditions.
Yeah. And far be it from me to be the one standing up on a soapbox and saying this, but Letang did say this, is that he hopes it's a lesson for people, and hopefully people can learn from his experiences here in understanding when you sense something is wrong with you, say something, you know, go get it checked out. And that can be for anything that anybody's dealing with medically or mentally or whatever it is. But this was a headache on Monday. He said he had a headache, and so he's like, I got to say something. They did. It rose to the level of, let's get him checked out. That's how they found out he had a stroke, a headache. So good on Chris Letang for understanding when something's not right with him. And unfortunately, he's had an experience with this, right? I mean, he's had experience with this particular incident in 2014, but he's had a lot of injuries through the course of his career. And he's, as you mentioned, persevered through them. So I expect him to persevere through this one too. But I definitely think that for anybody out there, this can be taken as a lesson of, you know what, if something's not right and you feel it, say something.
I think he knows that, right? He knows he needs to be safe. We talked about it in the beginning. He has a lot of things other than the Pittsburgh Penguins in his life, other than hockey in his life, as much as he loves it. And he's going to protect those things as much as humanly possible. So he knew to say something. I mean, and we should all know to say something and you know, try and knock things off as early as possible, right? Detection is the best prevention. As you go through life, and we're getting older, Dan, me much older than you, but we're getting older and we need to take care of ourselves. And it is a lesson. And these players are put in a position where their lives and what happens to them educates us, right? Like, that's the whole Hockey Fights Cancer movement. That's the whole mental health movement. You know, all the players in our game that have had mental health issues that have become examples to all of us to be better, to get better, to find a way to do both of those things. So there's almost always good that comes out of bad. And I think you hit it on the head. That is the good that comes out of this, is the reinforcement of the message. If things don't feel right, don't ignore them.
Yeah. And look, I mentioned at the top, I do want to talk Kings Kraken. We'll get there. And Daryl Ray, Razor Ray from the Dallas Stars broadcast team, the loquacious Daryl Ray, will be joining us shortly. We did an interview with him, so you're going to hear that as well as we talk about the Dallas Stars. But just to stay on this topic for just a little bit more, it might seem trivial because of what Chris Letang is dealing with, but now the Pittsburgh Penguins have to deal with the fact that they don't have Chris Letang, and we don't know how long they won't have Chris Letang. And the Penguins are in a playoff race fighting for it. You know, they've made the playoffs every single season since, I think it's 2005-06, Crosby's rookie year. And Letang is not having the Letang season from last season, but he is playing 24 minutes a night for this team. They've seemed to have figured it out a little bit defensively in the last couple of games. And now they won't have their best defenseman, their number one defenseman. So it does seem trivial, Sean, as I said, because of what he's dealing with. But this is the fact that the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to have to deal with this.
It's a huge blow to them. Like, you think about their defense, like, they redid their defense in the offseason. You know, John Marino is such an important part of the Devils, and he's injured day to day. And I don't think people realize how much that may hurt the Devils, but, you know, things fall off a little quickly after Chris Letang, right? You got Jeff Petrie, who's having a decent year. Marcus Peterson's been okay, you know, and then there's Dumoulin, certainly does a lot of things for them, but the whole of Chris Letang, especially with the way that their blue line was remade over the off season, is sizable.
Yeah. Well, look, he's got 12 points, Letang, and he leads defensemen in scoring for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So that's not a lot of points, you know, for Chris Letang, 12 points in 21 games, and he leads them all. So now you're looking at probably a Chad Ruedel at this point, who's going to, you know, be a guy who's going to have to pick up some minutes here. And you know, Jan Ruda is going to have to play a little bit more, and Petrie's going to have to play a little bit more. And so this is going to be an interesting thing to see how they deal with it, because it's not as if the Pittsburgh Penguins are in like this great position that they can, you know, just withstand an injury or two and be okay, right? I mean, they're middle of the pack in that division. They're middle of the pack in the Metropolitan Division, and they're going to probably be, I think, fighting for a playoff spot. You know, I don't know, in, out or whatever, but they're not going to be running away with a playoff spot at any point this season.
I've liked the Penguins since before the season started. I just think their veteran know-how is going to carry them. And look, they have Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby has 31 points this year.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. Like, he's inhuman. And it just seems like he's in one of those moods where he's like, I've heard enough. I've heard about our demise. I've heard that I'm no good anymore. I've heard that the Penguins are no good anymore. You know, here comes the rebuild. It was a mistake to sign these three guys to new contracts, meaning him, Letang, and Malkin. And he's basically internally said, I've had enough, and I'll show you. And he's showing us.
Yeah. He leads the NHL with 26 even strength points as we record this right now on Wednesday. Right behind him is Jason Robertson. The forward right behind him is Jason Robertson from Dallas. He's got 24. We'll talk about him a little bit later with Daryl Ray. But Sean, I did mention it. I wanted to get to the Kings and Kraken. That was wild. That game was insane. Tuesday night, 9-8. So I'm going to ask you a question. What's more surprising to you? That the Los Angeles Kings scored 8 and couldn't win, or that the Seattle Kraken needed 9 to win?
Well, I think it's the latter, and that they could get 9.
They could get 9.
this is a team. What was one of the issues that they had? It was that they couldn't score. And they scored in droves last night. I mean, it was crazy. The goals came from everywhere, every possible. When you have 17 goals, they are going to come from everywhere. But I mean, it was literally everything, you know, tips, in close deflections, passes, you know, beautiful goals, ugly goals, goals from distance. It was not a banner night for the goalies. But Seattle's really shown me a lot. And I don't love them. I might have them lower than anybody else in our Super 16, because they're pretty high up in the standings now. I don't know that this is sustainable, but they certainly showed me something last night. A, in the offense they were able to generate, and B, in their ability to take a punch and answer, which they couldn't do last year. They would get punched in the mouth and they would go away. And they don't seem to have that characteristic anymore.
You do not have them lower than everybody else, actually. Mike Morial from NHL Draft Class has them at 14. You have them at 11 in our Super 16, which is going to run Thursday. I have the Kraken at 8, which I think is, you know, I mean, look, they've won 6 in a row, points in 7 straight. But again, so I like them, right? I do. How do you not? I mean, 6 in a row, points in 7 straight. And that's all good. They've scored 26 goals in the last 4 games. But here's the thing. They gave up 5 against the Sharks and won. They gave up 8 against the Kings and won. They gave up 4 against the Ducks and won. How sustainable is that? That's not sustainable at all. And that's the concern. If you're going to nitpick on where this Kraken are right now, and who could argue with the success that they've had, you're going to nitpick at how they're winning some of these games. They're not going to be scoring 6, 7, 8, 9 a game a lot. They have to start, you know, keeping it out of their net a little bit better.
Martin Jones has been really good for them. You know, he's one of the great comeback stories this year. And he got a couple of votes in our Vezina trophy tracker that ran last week. He's playing to an under 9 save percentage.
Yeah.
So, you know, as good a story as it's been in the games that he's won, he's not giving them a lot of margin for error. Look, they're one of 5 teams in the last 25 years to score 8 or more goals twice in the span of 7 days. They did it. You mentioned it. They did it.
8-5 against the Sharks.
Last week against the Sharks. Yeah. Other teams, the 2006 Senators, Arizona, Washington, and Tampa all did it last year. So there's some good company there. There's some weird company there, but they are going to need to get sounder defensively.
And now, how about the other side of that? Right? Well, first off, one more point on the Kraken. The idea is when they drafted that team last year, when they put that team together, right, it was supposed to be like, oh, they have the goaltending and they have the defense. Their offense is going to be slow to come. Well, their offense is firing on all cylinders right now, and their defense is slow to come. So it's a little bit odd that they're winning games that way. We wouldn't have expected that. But flip it to the other team, the Los Angeles Kings. Jonathan Quick has an 890 save percentage. Cal Peterson's worse. The Kings are allowing 3.6 goals per game. This is so far and away not LA Kings hockey. Not even close. We knew when they got Kevin Fiala that their offense would improve, and they're scoring 3.3 per game, about 3.36 per game right now. But they're giving up way too much. They've won 3 games in which they've given up 4, right? We just talked about that with the Kraken. So now we're talking about the Kings. But they've given up 4 or more goals, Sean, in 13 games already. That is unrecognizable for the Los Angeles Kings. That's not at all what you expect from a team that has been built on Anze Kopitar, on Drew Doughty, and on Jonathan Quick.
And you look at their numbers, like, they're such a big minus, and Drew is still plus 2. And I know that's not it. It's not all the numbers, but their defense has not been good. Their system hasn't been great. And even their shutdown line hasn't performed the way that it did in the past. Like, there's something there, and it's kind of shocking the teams that have come up and kind of surfaced, right? We talk about the Kraken. There's a good pun right there. The Kraken have surfaced. Yeah. The Devils have surfaced. But so other teams have to come back. And it seems like the Kings are going to be one of those teams. The magic from last year doesn't seem to have been sustainable. Look, at some point, Quick is going to have some regression in his game. He's getting older. You know, he plays a style that I think is a little different from a lot of other goaltenders, and the game is kind of not tailored to his style anymore. But I thought Cal was going to be better than he was, and that transition was going to start, and that hasn't been the case. They're one of those teams right now that can't get a save, right? We talked about it with the Devils last year. You know, they couldn't get a save, and like, you know, it leads into another point that I think we'll probably talk about at some point, and that's the Rangers, right? And Igor hasn't been as good as he's been in the past, and so Gerard Gallant doesn't look as smart as he did. And then, like, so I thought about it, and, like, the three Vezina guys, right? Igor hasn't been anywhere near as good as he was last year. Saros hasn't been as good, and Nashville's kind of a middling team. And Markstrom's been horrible, right? He was at 922 last year. He's at an 889. And Calgary's out of the playoffs right now, right? And Darryl's not as smart a coach as he was last year. And that's what's happening in LA. Like, you could be the greatest coach in the world. If your goalie can't give you that momentum-changing save, you're suddenly worried about your job security. And again, like, they cannot get a save. It's shocking how unclutch their goaltending has been.
Yeah. Well, you thought about the Vezina guys from last year, the finalists. I wrote about it in the mailbag, but let's get that to that, the Rangers and more. On the other side, we were able to get in touch with Daryl Ray from the Dallas Stars, their broadcast team. It's got some of the best words and phrases in hockey. And he's also calling games for one of the more exciting teams in the game right now. So here's that interview with Daryl Ray. Daryl, thanks so much for joining us. Nobody can see it, only we can, but you've got the horns right behind your head. It looks like you've got the horns. You are a Texas Longhorn right now, aren't you?
Horns, antlers, got it all. It's wild kingdom in here right now.
How's it been for the Dallas Stars? Not so much Wild Kingdom, but they're a little bit more wild this season than they've been in the past, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, a change of approach under Pete DeBoer. I think maybe the mildly surprising thing is that it seems to have taken hold so quickly, when I think even the coaching staff and management would have thought this is going to take a little bit of time, and maybe by Christmas we start looking like the team that they envisioned. But man, almost immediately out of the gates, they were blowing people away early in games, playing. It's a more up-tempo style, trying to still adhere to what they were doing defensively in past under multiple coaches, most recently, obviously under Bones. But it's fairly freewheeling, and it's high event. And one of the byproducts that they've been able to navigate anyway is that they have taken a ton of penalties. And I just have to think a big part of that is trying to have that aggressive mindset and maybe just the adjustment of what you can and can't do in trying to be that aggressive all over the ice. Thank goodness their penalty kill has been as good as it has been. Otherwise, they'd be in a world of trouble, I think, right now.
We're all a little older here on this podcast, so I'm curious, have you figured out from Jamie Benn where the fountain of youth is?
I asked him. Look, I think there's no question he likes playing with the two young guys that he's playing with. And they've been outside of Hintz and Pavelski and Robertson, the most stable other line for the Stars. And productive with Wyatt Johnston in the middle and Ty Dellandrea on the other side. But I mean, individually speaking, I've watched them for 14 years now. I even back when they didn't even care about their own net, he and Sagan were just going nuts offensively. I don't remember him having a month like he just had in November, where it felt like every game, it was a multi-point game for Jamie. And he's in a little bit of a different role on the Stars power play. And a lot of that has been sort of the thrust of his his offense. He was always just purely the net front guy, and he's been moved into that middle spot. I think he's a little bit more of a creator from there rather than just be a guy screening and hacking or bludgeoning home a puck every now and then on the power play. So that's helped a little bit. But again, I'll go back to what I said in the opening, that the nature or the style that they're playing seems to really fit how you can best utilize Jamie, where he's not an awful skater by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think anybody would ever look at Jamie, especially with double hip surgery, mm-hmm. and think, well, skating, you know, he's not Connor McDavid. Few are, none are. But he's worked on it. And I think by having this sort of style where the wingers in particular are on the move, you know, you're not stopped and then starting and then stopped and then starting. It's like, even he said to me, I asked him about it and he said, I haven't fully embraced it yet, 'cause I can't believe they want me to just take off. But you know, that's from time to time in their system, the forwards are just blowing the zone and they're gone, and it opens up all kinds of room for them to do what they want to do offensively. So I think if he actually answered the question shorter than I just did, it would be that the style of play has prompted it. And I would add in that when good things start to happen for anybody, whether it's a rookie or a guy who's in his early 30s, that confidence is there, and he has confidence in everything that he's doing right now.
Is part of it that he's not, you mentioned he's not that net front guy anymore, and that he's just fresher. He's not getting the crap kicked out of him every day.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, it's a good point. I don't think it's not just that part of it, but there was a stretch of time where Jamie felt like he had to fight everybody's battles all the time. I mean, there weren't a lot of guys after him that were similar type players, like a power forward or you know, a physical guy that's going to play. So the fact that DeBoer deploys his lines almost evenly, like that first month and maybe 6 weeks, they were, I mean, your top end guys like Robertson's close to leading the league at that point in points and in goals. And he's playing like 15 and a half minutes a game. And Joel Kiviranta is still looking for his first assist this season, and he's playing, you know, of 12, 15. So they were rolling these four lines. I think Jamie was always fresh because of that. And then the fact that, yeah, it's not bogged down like maybe it was before. It's seen something that I've coined. It's my phrase. Don't steal it. It's the Renaissance. We're experiencing the Renaissance here in Dallas right now.
Well, that's, of course, that's your phrase. Well, I want to get to some of these phrases in a little bit, by the way. But in regards to what you guys were just talking about, right? What you were just talking about there with the freedom that the wingers have to blow the zone, to skate, to go. I remember sitting down with Roope Hintz and Miro Heiskanen. We were at the European Player Media Tour, and we were talking about DeBoer's system, the way that the excitement that they had. And this is not to crap on Bones or anything like that. Look, he's having great amount of success in Winnipeg right now, right?
Yes.
But it was more conservative. And I wonder if it's just the freedom of allowing these guys to go is what we're seeing. I don't want to say they took the joy out of hockey, but when you have freedom, it adds joy to the game for these guys.
Yes. And there's truth within there. Look, no athlete, certainly no hockey player that has some skill ever wants to just be in a purely robotic system. And that's not really what they mm-hmm. were, but there's no question. Like they attended to their own net first and foremost, and then they worried about the other team's net. And that said, they would create tons of these scoring opportunities and they could just never finish. And this group now, you know, they're told, I think one of the slogans for Pete DeBoer is take your turn, and you can see it in the group. Like it's not, they're not just sitting there and going, okay, Tyler and Jamie, Roope, Joe and Jason, you guys score all our goals for us. And then we'll check and we'll do this and we'll try to spend some time. We'll chip one in every now and then. they expect everyone to be thinking offense, all the defensemen, all the forwards, every line. And I think that's helped quite a bit. And again, you have the tools of your decor to be able to get out of your own zone. And he, I've asked Pete many times, I'm like, so what are you harping on with your, because they were scoring just boatloads of goals. And I was like, what are you harping on? Like, what do you want the guys to parrot in the room? What do you want them to hear from you? And he would always go back to, everything we do in the offensive zone is predicated on how we get out of our own zone. And that's where they, if they had issues in past, it was some of that. They were just sluggish getting out of their own zone. Then everybody can get set up in the neutral zone, so there's no speed going through the neutral zone. Then you hit the offensive blue line. You can't make a play because they're stacked up there. So you have to dump the puck in. And then it's just a grind. And by getting out of their own zone like that, like on the move consistently, it means there's more space to blow through neutral and pile into the offensive zone under control, because they have no choice but to back off a little bit. And when you watch it every night, you're like, yeah, I guess you can make some plays and score some goals when you've created that much space all over the ice.
And it certainly helps in your own end when you have Ottinger back there, knowing that he can make a stave when you're trying to blow the zone and you're maybe in an outnumbered position. And we should talk about Jake, but first I want to ask you, I mean, you travel with this team all the time. Is Jason Robertson the quietest superstar in the NHL?
Oh, he has to be. He has to be. Like, you know, we've continued to try to find a similar type player that has been around in past, and it's been difficult to do. And he is very unassuming. And then at the end of every night, he's on the sheet. And a lot of nights it's multiple. Most nights it's a goal. And it just, I mean, there's not this exaggerated flash and panache out of him. And yet, if you just watch him and you slam together like we do on television for our little packages and that, and you put it all together, you're like, my God, he's an incredibly smart and slippery offensive talent. And you know the other side's all game planning for him. And yet he along with his line mates, there's just fabulous chemistry with the three of them. They just find a way to produce game in and game out. I think he even shocked himself the other night when he scored on that one. He's like, you know, like, I can't stop scoring. He's like, I can't stop scoring. He's shrugging his shoulders. I just keep shooting. It keeps going in.
I remember when he was, it wasn't that long ago, when he was a rookie, and I'm like, all right, who is this guy and is this sustainable? Like that was the right question, you know, right? Like, is this sustainable? Is he going to be this player, or is he going to kind of revert and be more of like a middle six type of guy who's going to produce a little bit? What has he done to sustain it? Like, where has he improved?
Well, that's what he does. He just improves. When he first started, and look, he scored like this in junior hockey. But I mean, how many guys have we seen through the years that were unbelievable scorers in junior, and then they have to reinvent themselves as a two-way player in the NHL because you just can't do it at this level. He's doing exactly what he did in junior hockey at the NHL level. Like it's like a tap of offense. It just never turns off. So if you go back to when he first started under Bones, the first few games, like he looked lost. Like he would get bounced off pucks. He was no factor whatsoever offensively. He was a bit of a liability defensively. They sat him out to watch. I think he came back and played again a little bit. And then it was like, you know what? You need to just repackage this thing a little bit. And once he got it, once he started to figure it out, and he's that type of guy. Like if you tell him something, I think it just gets absorbed. Or you say to him, you need to be better at this, or that needs to improve. Or because I mean, the first year he couldn't score on the road. Like he was a non-factor on most road nights. And then he goes into the next year and he was hell bent on being a better producer on the road. And then you look at his numbers at the end of the year and you're like, boom, done. It's like he takes all these little boxes and just, I don't know whether it's him creating it or they're being suggested to him or whatever it is, but he just checks them off. Mm-hmm. So this past summer, he he and whatever people that he has involved in looking at these things, whether it's coaches or his own skills people, they looked at the number of shots that he had blocked last year. And it seemed like a really high number. So then he comes into this season with the idea, that's going to be a focus for me. I'm not going to have as many of my shots blocked as I did a year ago. I'm going to be a smarter shooter. And then you watch him and you're just like, boom. So I don't know where the ceiling is for him if he's going to keep doing this. He's like AI. He's artificial intelligence.
That's kind of the Sidney Crosby model. I mean, that's what made Sid amazing was every year you'd be like, he's the best player in the world. And he'd be like, ah, I was no good on faceoffs. Like,
right.
He's the greatest offensive player there ever was, maybe. And he's like, I'm losing too many faceoffs. And he spent a whole summer working on it. You know, we had Zach Hyman on the show last week, and he was like, it's really easy when you're chasing somebody to be, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. But he was talking about his teammate in McDavid. He's like, when you're the best, what do? Like, how do you get better? You're the best. There's no bar. There's only your own internal bar. And those are the players, they generate like these challenges and these chips on their shoulders where they're just like, I stink at this. And nobody else is saying it. He stinks at this. Like, if he doesn't get better, he's going to get run out of the league. But it's that internal, almost that internal quiet pressure they put on themselves.
Agreed. And then you couple that with just flat out consistency. Like, there aren't a lot of nights where you come out of the game. Well, there's been none for the past month, but even before, where you came out of the game and you're like, man, he just didn't have it, or there was nothing there. A week goes by with nothing. Like, it's consistent. It's there all the time. Even on nights when he doesn't score goals, he gets 3, 4, 5, what you would look at considering who it is. And you're like, that's probably a scoring chance.
Yeah. Last guy I wanted to ask you about was Miro Heiskanen. Right. So again, another guy I sat down with before the season, we talked about how the offense could come for him, right? The DeBoer system, Klingberg being gone, getting more on the power play. He's actually not getting a tremendous amount more on the power play in terms of ice time. It's like 20 seconds a game that he's playing more on the power play, not than he had been. But he's on a 65 point pace, which to me sounds right for Miro Heiskanen, but he's never even been close to that. So is it the system? Or is it just he's growing up as an offensive player?
Yeah, I mean, we ask the question a lot, too, because I think most anybody that watches him all the time and has watched him fairly closely, you're like, okay, what would happen if the governor or the restrictor plate got taken off,
right?
So to speak? And I just don't think he's that. I don't think he's that player. I don't think his mind works that way when he's in the game. Like, we were flabbergasted the other day. I went through all the penalties because they haven't really drawn that many power plays. They've taken a ton of penalties, but they haven't drawn that many for a team that, you know, is playing flat out and scoring a ton of goals and all that. They just don't get on the power play as much as you would think they would. And going into the game the other night, he'd only drawn one power play.
Wow.
For a guy that plays half the game, skates like him, you know, mules the puck up the ice and all that. You would think guys are he's going to lose some people. They're going to have to hook, hold, slash, whatever it is. But there was only the one because Miro will get it through to a point and then he has a deferral. I don't know if it's a deferral complex or what it is. And they're always great plays, like always great plays. But he as of yet anyway, hasn't had that, I'm just going to keep going. Like Makar does, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Like, there are times with Makar where it's just like, he's just going to go that extra little mile and create something for himself, or somebody's going to score on a rebound or whatever. And with Miro, he's so much like Jim Nill said it many times. And in the beginning, I'd always look at him and I'm like, he's Scott Niedermeyer to me. He's Scott Niedermeyer, Scott Niedermeyer, Scott Niedermeyer. And he'd say he's Nick Lidstrom. And I've come to believe Jim more, I think, now, because what Lidstrom was great at back in the day is he just did the right thing every time, all the time, over and over and over and over and over, the right play every time. And he was so good with his stick defensively. And when you watch Miro, his ability to skate allows him to flow around in that. But he makes the right play with the puck. He makes the right play defensively without the puck all game long. He just doesn't have that red zone attitude that some of the other guys do. Maybe he just thinks I've got to defend and I don't want to get caught up there and trust a forward to do my job.
Well, he's a coach's dream in that way. I'm curious, you know, we've talked about a lot of the top end guys in Dallas, some who are having a renaissance and others who have been good for a long time. Who's the unsung guy on this team when Dallas comes to town that people should be watching and say, that's the guy I need to pay attention to? Either he's the next guy or he's the glue guy that kind of holds things together.
Oh, geez, that's a good question. Like, Miro's the glue. There's no question. Like, Miro is the glue, especially to that core on defense. Up front, I mean, the guy that has impressed me, and I felt in past that they missed having an individual like him in the mix, is Ty Dellandrea. You know, he going back to drawing penalties, like, he leads a team in drawn penalty. I think he's top 10 in the league. He gets in there. He's tenacious. He's always in the battle. He's a good enough player to create stuff offensively. He's one of their best penalty killers. I think he's ascending to become that guy, right, that you're speaking of, that is a true glue player within your lineup. That line in general, like, you have the 19-year-old Wyatt Johnston, who really has not looked at all like a teenager for the most part. And then you have Jamie and his resurgence on the left, and you have Ty Dellandrea on the right. And I think they've been a real stabilizing force for the entire crew in that. You know, if you're gonna just drill down to the most simple answer to what you asked, though, you'd be like, okay, well, Miro takes care of the D and Roope Hintz takes care of the forward group, because he really does. As a center iceman, who plays the most minutes, plays on the top line, and impacts every single part of the Stars game, because he kills penalties. He's dangerous when he does so. He's their best two-way center iceman on the team. He's involved in their offense and all that. He's a huge part of their power play. So he would be the guy that sort of stirs it and dictates it up front.
8-year deal, $8.45 million AAV. Good for him. Good for the Dallas Stars, too. That's a steal.
Yeah. I mean, those two guys are getting paid like individuals that are going to be the heartbeat of this club for the next decade, and they've certainly earned it.
All right, one more for you from me, and I did say I wanted to get to it, some of the phrases. So we've heard renaissance, and I got to ask you before we let you go, what is your favorite phrase that you've come up with?
Oh, God.
Do you write them down? I mean, do you save them, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're around. Some of them, you just, you know, the time marches on, you can't use them anymore. More words that stick out than than phrases. Although, you know, I have always loved artists and plunderers and those things, star alliances and everything else, about nexus of passes. But I've always loved transmogrification. I don't know why. It's just one of my favorite words. And you see a team that changes, and they thought they were going to go this direction, and they're just circling the drain. And you're like, that is true transmogrification right there with that. And then, you know, look, I'm a former goaltender, so big saves. I'll go with elephantine, mastodonic, larcenous. You know, some of those ones, instead of "woo, great save." So those ones are the ones that stick out. And you know what? Nowadays, you have to be a lot more careful in how cute you want to be in front of a microphone.
Sure,
yeah. You just do.
Well, you certainly keep it entertaining. And I'm going to tell you right now, so I don't get in trouble later, I'm leaving here to go tell our headline writers about the renaissance. And it's going to end up on NHL.com the next time Jamie has a good game. And you're going to be like, they stole it. I told them not to steal it, and they stole it.
I was kidding. It's my gift.
Well, we love it. It's great stuff. Daryl, thanks so much for joining us. This was really good. We got to really know a little bit more about the Dallas Stars with this one. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
As always, as expected, Sean, great stuff there from Daryl Ray. So we touched on it before we played that interview. So let's get back to it. The mailbag, I touched on it in my weekly mailbag. the three Vezina Trophy finalists from last year, and you brought it up too, Igor Shesterkin, Jacob Markstrom, and UC Saros, all not having the same types of seasons, and all three of those teams that they're on not in a playoff position right now. So to me, it's telling, obviously, of where your goaltending is. But the one I wanted to hit on, because I also touched on the Rangers in my mailbag too, is Shesterkin. He came out the other day, you know, in the locker room. I was there. We asked to talk to the goalie. He comes out, no cameras, so he could do it in English. He doesn't do it in English if there's cameras. And I was the one, I was asking the first question, and he just came out and said the goalie was blank. I'm not going to say it again. I'm ashamed. He's falling on his sword, which I admire. He gave up four in a period against the Oilers, and they lost the game. They should have won. He gave up four in a stretch of about 22 minutes against the Devils after they took a 2-0 lead. They had a 3-0 lead against Edmonton. They lost that game. And I thought it was even more telling when Gerard Gallant was asked about it. He didn't defend him. Right? He didn't defend him. He said he's as much a part of the problem as everybody else, which I admire again for him saying that. But usually you hear, well, we're not going to put, you know, it's not the goalie. We're not putting this on the goalie. We got to be better in front of the goalie and this, that, and the other. But Gallant didn't do that. And Shesterkin was quite critical of his own self in this. So I find that to be, this is a very interesting time now for the New York Rangers for a number of reasons. That being, I think, number one.
Well, the coach did come out today and say, hey, look, we want this guy. We love this guy.
Yeah, of course he did.
He's not the issue. You know, it's good that he's so self-critical. But at some point, it becomes too much. And he's good. Igor is good. He's playing to a 913 save percentage.
Right?
Right? That's 26th in the league of anybody that's played more than five games. So if you get into starters, you know, he's still probably top half of the league, right? And would you want him on your team? Of course you would. He's slumping a little bit, but he hid so much of the Rangers mess that they were an elite team. He's like the perfect foundation, dude. Cover up. He hides everything, all the imperfections, right? And he's not hiding them now. And they're showing. And, you know, in HD, they're going to show more. But, you know, Chris Kreider's not scoring. Their power play is not elite. I mean, it's all the things we've talked about before. Their own zone coverage isn't as good. Their discipline isn't as good. You know, they're blowing leads, something that they didn't do last year. They're not able to shut teams down. They got skated out of their own building by the Devils.
Oh, yeah.
Skated.
Well, they're skating everybody out of the building, though.
But, I mean, it was shocking the difference in the speed the game was played at by the two teams.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of problems there. And if I listed them, Igor would be 10th.
100% agree with you. I just think it's one of the interesting storylines about the team that the goalie that they rely on so much is not superhuman right now. And that's bleeding into the rest of the team's play. That's part of it, right? Now, as you mentioned, all their warts are showing. Jacob Trouba has been struggling tremendously, but there's two other guys here, right, that I wanted to hit on before we moved on from this topic. Alexi Lafreniere was a number one pick. Kaapo Kakko was a number two pick in the draft. Kakko's in his fourth season. Lafreniere's in his third season. Between them, they have 7 goals. That's not enough. Like, come on, right? Like I'm not going to be here saying they're busts. No shot. You know, to me, you get a lot more of a runway before I call you a bust in the NHL. You're playing in the NHL. Kakko at times has looked, if you watch closely, has looked like one of the Rangers' best forwards. He can't score. He reminds me of Pavel Buchnevich when he was with the Rangers, in that he was around the net all the time and it was like, oh, look at all the skill. And yet he can never score. Like, and I watched the guy miss the net in practice over and over and over again. I'm like, how is he missing the net so often? Nobody's in the net and he's missing it. Kakko reminds me of that a little bit. But Lafreniere, like, you have to be able to take that next step at some point. Look at Jack Hughes. Jack Hughes has, not slowly now, but over his time has taken each step better and better and better. Last year, second half of the year, he was terrific in meaningless games. Now he's terrific in very meaningful games, right? I mean, the Rangers went into this season knowing their cap situation was a struggle, knowing that they had two guys who were supposed to be quote unquote generational players, and they are not doing anything for them.
No, and I think you need at a minimum 20 goals out of those guys. Like, that's what you
each
drafted.
Of each yeah. of them, not yeah. combined. They're no. on pace for combined 20.
Yeah, no, each of them, because that's what you drafted for, right? Like, you drafted Patrick Laine is basically what you drafted, mm-hmm. right? What you thought you were drafting.
What you thought you were getting, yeah.
And they haven't gotten that. And I don't understand why. I don't understand if they were overvalued. I don't think that's the case. I don't understand if it's opportunity. I mean, you see some guys go to different places and then all of a sudden things take off for them. You know, I'm not suggesting that that needs to be the case here, but, you know, are they getting the opportunity? Are they being put in the positions? Are they being coached the way that they need to be coached? It perplexes me. I don't think, you know, you put either one in the bust category yet, but if I'm Chris Drury, I'm starting to get a little nervous, because if you're going to be a good team, you have to hit more than you don't hit, right? And the higher the pick, the more value is in it. And when you don't hit on those picks, the more painful it becomes down the road, because you can't do anything with them, right? Like, there's no appreciation. Like, it's like buying a car and you drive it off the lot and all of a sudden it's not worth as much. Like, that's what's happening here, is all this value is going away, and it's never going to be recouped on the ice from those players, or in when you say, that's it, I'm pulling the plug, what are you going to get back? Like, you're never going to capture the value of that draft pick at right. this point.
No, and those two have to pick it up. They're two of the problems right now with the Rangers, and it's a reason why Jimmy Vesey's playing on a first line right now. Jimmy Vesey was a PTO guy, right? I mean, he's not a first line player. Not, no offense to Jimmy Vesey here. I mean, he's an NHL player. He's not a first line player. But it also goes back to the goaltender, right? Who ran away with the Vezina last season, and he is not doing that this season. Although he's been fine, good at times, he hasn't been doing that. So the Rangers are in that struggle. Same as we mentioned before, with Markstrom and the Flames in that struggle. Dan Vladar started the last two games. Actually, they won them both. They look pretty good. UC Saros needs to pick up his game with Nashville. But we did our trophy tracker series, Sean. It ran last week, and Connor Hellebuck and Linus Ullmark were basically neck and neck for the Vezina in the first quarter. One in Hellebuck, you know, he's been there before, so it's not a surprise that he's there again. He's, I don't want to say carrying the Jets, but he's been a huge part of their success. Linus Ullmark is not carrying the Boston Bruins. They are just a tremendous hockey team, but he's having a terrific season for them this season. And he's a part of why they are a terrific hockey team, why they've won 13 in a row at home, setting an NHL record, all that stuff. So when you look at the trophy tracker, Sean, I mean, we had Hellebuck. He was right there, number one, but Ullmark right behind him. The surprise is obviously Ullmark. And the other surprise is that it's not Shesterkin, I guess, or Markstrom or Saros.
Look, I mean, you look at the Bruins and they've won, what, 19 of the first 22 games. I think there's only been four teams in the history of the NHL to do it. And it's not on the back of goaltending. They're complete. And then you look at, like, the Adams Trophy, right? And Lindy Ruff's at the top. I mean, what he's done with the Devils is unbelievable. But then it's Montgomery with the Bruins. And then it's Bruce Cassidy with Vegas. And those two teams play on Monday. And what a great game that's going to be. Bruce coming back to Boston. The fans love them, and rightfully so. Like, he's a good personality. He did some good things for the Bruins. Each team's going to want to show that they made the right choice. You know, I think Bruce might put some money up on the board for his team to walk out of Boston with a win. It's best against best in best of the East versus best of the West. And it should just be fantastic. And those guys were 2-3 in the voting behind Ruff for Adams. And as good as both of them have been, I don't think you could argue that they are better than Lindy Ruff. I think each of them has a better team than Lindy Ruff does.
Isn't it amazing that Lindy Ruff went from being one of the worst coaches in the National Hockey League to the best? this, you know, in just a matter of a quarter of a season. It's amazing how that happens. Maybe he wasn't that bad, right? You don't hang around and have as many wins and games coached and impact on players for over two decades if you're not a good coach. Lindy Ruff has always been a good coach. His team wasn't very good.
His goaltending was horrible,
awful. Right,
and we've made that point over and over: is that goalies make you look smart or they make you look stupid? But congratulations to Lindy Ruff, who's had a lot of goalies. He now has 800 wins.
Yeah, 800 wins.
You don't do that by accident.
No, and this team's for real. Like I finally
believe it. I had him up high this year.
Yeah,
I mean this week in the Super 16 because you can't keep on saying all last year. Like this is a different team.
Yeah. They're for real. Connor McDavid was the Hart Trophy guy. I know you disagree with that. I mean, I know you think Erik Karlsson should be.
And he was fifth amongst our peers. So nobody on the NHL.com staff knows as much as I do.
Right, exactly. That's how we'll phrase this. Sure. Okay. That's what we'll carry on with. So I'll do this instead to you because you wanted to bring it up, but now I'm not even going to let you. Mitchell Marner was not the Hart Trophy guy. Connor McDavid was, but Mitchell Marner can set a Toronto record if he gets a point against the San Jose Sharks in a few hours from now, from when we're recording this. He's tied right now, right, with Daryl Sittler and Eddie Olczyk, 17 games in a row with at least a point. He's got 23 points in this, 6 goals, 17 assists. So you want to bring it up, but I did it instead.
Well, and you brought it up wrong. He will tie those two.
He will tie those.
This is
why you should have been able to bring it up.
Exactly. You tried to steal my thunder and you did it wrong. Yeah. He will tie those two fine gentlemen.
That's right.
He's got 23 points in 17 games. To me, and again, I have all these blasphemous takes. There's a good Darryl word right there. I have all these blasphemous takes. He's the MVP of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's not Austin Matthews. It's him. And he's been unbelievable. And until I brought it up to you and probably to some of the listeners, they probably had no idea.
No, I knew about it. I wrote about it the other day in our On Tap.
How good he's been.
Yeah.
How incredibly consistent and good he's been. He's their best player right now. Maybe Austin's better. He's their best player right now.
Well, look, I mean, I think Austin Matthews is just held to a higher standard. So last year, Austin Matthews gets 60 goals and all of a sudden people are looking and saying, well, he's only on a 40 goal pace, right? Well, that's, I mean, come on. You score 60 maybe once in your career. You don't do it multiple times back to back to back to back years. You continue to get 40 and 50. You're a Hall of Famer. But I can't argue with you the fact that, you know, in this stretch, Austin, you know, Mitchell Marner has been Toronto's most important player, been their best player. And is it, it's kind of funny to me, Sean, like maybe it's just me, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, they don't do anything quiet, right? Because the media in Toronto and it's the capital of the hockey universe, all that. I find it to be like, they're just quietly winning all these games and one of the best teams again, where, you know, because I think we look for teams like that to nitpick at them because, you know, that's what they've earned and, you know, with lack of playoff success. But here they are just ripping off win after win after win after win.
Yeah. They're like the U.S. soccer team in the World Cup, right? Like, let's nitpick. They made it to the round of six. They made it to the knockout round, which when you looked at it, you're like, oh, can they do it? Can they do it? They don't lose a game. They give up one goal that wasn't a penalty kick. Yeah. And people are like, well, they didn't do it with style. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. Who cares? Mm-hmm. You play in Netherlands in a knockout stage in a game you could possibly win. And to me, that's Toronto, right? They win and they win. And they're like, oh, they're goaltending. All their defense is hurt.
Right.
Austin Matthews isn't playing as well. Now, do I think they're a team that can win in the playoffs? I don't know, but they're a really good team right now. And they win games that you don't think they deserve to win or they should win because of the injuries they have and some of the inconsistencies they have and the goaltending questions they have, but they've done it all. And they continue to do it. So, you know, I find them to be one of the most interesting teams. And I just want to, before we close the show with another goal scorer, I just want to circle back for a minute onto the trophy tracker. So Erik Karlsson won the Norris, and there should be no question about that. He is the best defenseman in the league this year. Cale Makar is going to be the best defenseman for the next decade. He's not playing like Erik Karlsson is right now. But there was a huge oversight. And I'll admit when I make a mistake, but everybody made a mistake, and it needs to be addressed. There's a player in this league whose nickname right now is Josh Norrissey because he's playing so well. And it's a great nickname.
It is.
No votes.
No votes. Yeah, 13, that's an oversight.
13-member panel of NHL.com. He didn't get a fifth-place vote. And I will say he's really taken off since we voted, even before it was published, because there's a little bit of a runway. You know, we vote, then I have to add, and that takes like 10 days because I can't add. I keep coming up with the wrong numbers, and I have to do it over again. And then it finally makes it onto the site, and the Norris was one of the later ones. So there was probably an 8 to 10 day window between when we voted and when it was published. And Josh went off. He had 2 game winners in that period, you know, overtime goals. But even before that, he was playing really well. And, you know, it's the old refrain. Oh, nobody pays attention to Winnipeg. We're out here in the prairie. Nobody likes us. We never get any attention. It wasn't that. It was just people had their eyes on other people. And look, some of this is reputational, right? Adam Fox got a lot of votes for the Norris Trophy. I don't know how good a year he's having. He's got a lot of points, but he's like the rest of the New York Rangers in that, you know, I don't think he's where he was. So some of it's reputational, and it takes a little while for the train to get into the station. But Josh Norrissey's coming. I just want everybody to know that.
Yeah, look, and look, I mean, we all were enamored with Connor Hellebuck too. So maybe that had something to do with it as well. Their goalie was the Vezina guy. So you can't, how do you put a defenseman, you know, as the Norris guy? But look, I mean, he's played 21 games this season. He's got points in 17 of them.
Yeah.
At least a single point in 17 of them. So, all right, before we close, you got your Josh Morrissey thing in, which you're 100% right at. How about Alex Ovechkin? Just one last little nod before we close this show. Alex Ovechkin, 403 road goals, passes Wayne Gretzky for most in NHL history. He's got 13 goals this season. He's on a 44-goal pace. He is currently 8 away from tying Gordie Howe. He's 101 away from Wayne Gretzky. He's going to do it. And he's going to do it in fewer games than Gretzky played.
I heard, and I don't know if this is true, that last night Alex petitioned Gary Bettman and asked to play the Vancouver Canucks 4 more times this year. Because he's eaten them alive in the 2 games. They're done now for the year. And I Ovi had, what, 5 goals in those 2 games?
Yeah.
Like, it just, he's feasted on him. And there's a lot of goalies he's feasted on and a lot of teams he's feasted on. But things have not come as easy for Alex this year. There's been longer stretches between goals. But maybe
he's got
this,
13. He's got 44 goal pace.
Yeah. Do you feel like he was on a normal Ovi pace?
No, but this is what he does. This is what a goal scorer does, right? They rip it off. And they rip off a run, and that's how they get to their number. You know, they can go quiet for 5 or 6 games. Doesn't happen often, but he can go quiet for 5 or 6 games and then score 7 and 9.
Well, I know. And it's, as somebody who plans coverage, it scares the living daylights out of me, because we're trying to make a package for when he starts, you know, 800, 801, 802. And you're like, oh, he's really far away. And then you wake up 3 days later and he's at 799. And you're like, how did he get here? Yeah. So it's unbelievable. The most road goals in the history of the NHL. Like, the numbers, like, you can't even process what he's accomplished. And you won't until well after he retires. But just brilliance.
Also made me think that Wayne Gretzky scored a lot of goals at home, you know?
Yeah.
He scored a lot of goals at home. Anyway, look.
They couldn't match up against him.
No, they couldn't. Alex Ovechkin keeps doing it. We thank Daryl Ray for jumping on with us. We wish Chris Letang the best, Sean, and that's how we started the show. And I think Seattle and LA just scored another goal.
Well, the scoreboard just broke, so we don't know.
Okay, they're out of lights, actually. The lights went out on the scoreboard, and the lights are going out on this show. Thanks for listening, and everybody enjoy the hockey.